Boosted, it's good. Welcome to Beyond the Headlines on CRUT 89.5 FM. I am your host, Janelle Alvaro, along with my colleague, Ragini Singh Panwa. Beyond the Headlines is a weekly current affairs show that aims to make public policy discussions more accessible to you. We take you beyond the headlines of our daily news, bringing you access to current leaders through in-depth interviews. You can join us in the conversation by tweeting at @beyond_headlines. That's BYOND_headlines. The global decline in fertility rates poses significant challenges for socioeconomic structures, with Canada experiencing a notable decrease that mirrors this worldwide trend. This reduction in birth rates leads to an aging population, straining healthcare, pension systems, and altering workforce dynamics. In Canada, the fall in fertility rates necessitates a re-evaluation of immigration policies to counterbalance demographic shifts and maintain economic growth. The decline also prompts concerns about sustainability of social support systems, as a smaller working age population may struggle to support an increasing number of retirees. Addressing these implications requires comprehensive policy planning and international cooperation to adapt to the changing demographic landscape. This week's episode examines the declining fertility rates in both Canada and globally, and delves into the socioeconomic impacts of the corresponding demographic shifts. Our guest today is Professor Dawn Kerr. Professor Kerr is a demographer who teaches at King's University College at Western University. From 1992 to 2000, he worked in the Demography Division at Statistics Canada. With a PhD in social demography from Western University, Professor Kerr's past research has focused on social demography, population estimates and projections, environmental demography, and the socioeconomic and political consequences of demographic change in Canada. His work has been published in leading journals such as the Canadian Studies in Population, the Canadian Review of Social Policy, and the Canadian Journal of Disability Studies. Here's Ragini Singh Panwa's interview, Professor Dawn Kerr.
So hello, Professor Kerr. Thank you so much for joining me today on Beyond the Headlines.
You're welcome.
A few weeks back, Statistics Canada released that Canada's total fertility rate in 2022 is the lowest recorded in over a century. So to start off our conversation, could you please tell our listeners what exactly a fertility rate is and what's the current situation in Canada?
Yeah, Stats Canada said that they've never seen a fertility rate like that. So, I mean, this is unprecedented. Yeah, the fertility rate actually is one indicator that demographers often work with to try to get a sense as to whether women are having kids in particular. The most recent data that was released by Stats Can related to 2022. So we're just coming out of the pandemic, and they were expecting somewhat of a rebound. Anyway, what the total fertility rate tells us is that if women were to continue indefinitely to sort of have kids like they did in 2022, then over their life course, they would end up with about 1.3 kids on average, which is really low, really low. It's never been so low. It's at a record low for Canada. It's a record low across 8 of 10 provinces. I mean, it's moving into this territory which the UN sort of considers to be the lowest of low fertility. Okay. Now, having said that, it's not necessarily a forecast, right? It is possible that the birth rate rebounds somewhat into the future. It could happen, right? The longer term trajectory, though, has been downward. So if this continues, it's of some concern to some people.
And just building on that, you mentioned that it's the lowest in 8 out of 10 provinces. So is there any specific reason why there would be variations amongst regions? And speaking of trends, could you please tell our listeners how we got to this point?
Actually, how far back should we go? Let's go back to, you know, my lifetime, because I was born during the height of the baby boom, right? And so the birth rate at the height of the baby boom in Canada, and it was true right across North America, the birth rate was really high. In Canada, it was about four births per woman, right? And what happened, that was roughly, that was the end of the 1950s, early 1960s. From that point on, Canada's birth rate fell dramatically during the 1960s and into the early 70s, and it fell well below replacement level fertility. When we talk about replacement level fertility, that's about two births per woman, enough to sort of replace the mother and replace the father. Anyway, it fell below replacement level into the early 70s, and it sort of stabilized. And for the next several decades, it sort of hovered between about 1.8 and 1.6. Most recently, though, it started to decline. From around 2009, we've seen a steady decrease in our birth rate. Every year since, with the exception of one year, it's been going down, lower and lower and lower. And we've never been into this territory of, again, ultra low fertility before. Now, it varies somewhat across provinces for a variety of reasons, economic and cultural. It's actually right now, surprisingly, it's lower than average in Ontario, right? And you'd think that, there's plenty of economic opportunities in Ontario and so on, but it's actually below the national average in Ontario. It's down around 1.27 in Ontario. It's actually higher than average. Two provinces in particular come to mind, Alberta and the province of Quebec. And it's slightly higher than average in both of those provinces, for probably different reasons. I think of Alberta, for example. That's Canada's, I would say, wealthiest province, right? It has a lower it's historically had a lower unemployment rate. Its average income for young adults in particular is quite a bit higher in Alberta than any other province in Canada. I mean, economic conditions have been relatively good for adults in that province. If you think of the level of taxation and so on, it's lower than elsewhere. They don't have the same sales tax. In other words, it's kind of easier for people to establish themselves economically. I think that's probably one of the reasons why it's a bit higher in Alberta than elsewhere. The other province that has higher than average fertility is actually Quebec, the province of Quebec. And again, for different reasons, Quebec's always had. It's a bit of a social democracy in Quebec, right? Whereby there's sort of more, there's a long history in that province whereby the government's sort of been supportive of families, has a slightly more progressive taxation system. And it's actually actively encouraged fertility for a couple of decades now. It's been more supportive of universal childcare, affordable childcare. I know that's rolling out across the country right now, but Quebec has a long history with that sort of thing. Maternity, paternity leave, more generous in the province of Quebec as well. So they're slightly higher, right, than elsewhere. In Canada's far north, it tends to be higher. In northern Saskatchewan, northern Manitoba, places like that, it tends to be higher. One of the reasons for that is that First Nations, Indigenous people in Canada, they tend to have higher fertility. They're more into kids than the rest of us, I guess. So the birth rate is actually, the last time I saw it, estimated for First Nations in Canada, it's up above replacement or close to it anyway. So, I mean, those provinces have a disproportionate, a larger proportion of their population that's Indigenous, which leads to slightly higher fertility. So it varies from place to place. It's curious that it's at its lowest in British Columbia, right? Which is a relatively affluent place, but the cost of living is really high out there. It's down at around 1.1 in British Columbia. That's the province with the lowest birth rate. On the East Coast as well in Canada, curiously, Newfoundland and Nova Scotia, a lower than average birth rate. So, it varies from place to place for a wide variety of reasons.
Thank you for that very expansive overview. Now, taking a broader look at the issue, what are current global fertility trends? And are there any countries that are experiencing more favorable fertility rates? And what factors contribute to these differences?
Well, one of the interesting things about Stats Canada's report that just came out a week or a week and a half ago was that they compared Canada's birth rate to other members of the G7 in particular. And we were sort of middle of the pack there. But what was noteworthy is that all these countries, I mean, the United States is now at a near all-time low, right? It actually fell to an all-time low 2 years ago, but it's still very low by American standards. The fertility rate in the US has fallen to about 1.67, I believe, most recently. Typically, they've had very high fertility, with some amongst the highest fertility among more developed countries, with fertility above replacement. But it's gone down quite a bit as of late. It's gone down across most countries in Europe. It's gone down in France. It's gone down in Germany. It's gone down in the UK. Both UK and Germany tend to have slightly higher fertility than Canada, as does France. But there are other parts of Europe where the fertility is falling really low. You go to Southern Europe, places like Italy and Spain, the birth rate's down at around 1.1, 1.2. Where it's really low is in East Asia now. Several countries in East Asia, it's fallen to remarkably low levels. I mean, South Korea, it's down below, well below one. It's actually 7.78 children on average in South Korea, which is really low. Japan has, for the longest time, had a quite low fertility. Its birth rate fell before Canada's did many decades back, and it's remained really low for a long time. And as a result, as a byproduct, it's not a country of immigration. Its population is beginning to shrink with that very low fertility. One thing that's really striking, and not many people saw this coming, was that China's birth rate has fallen quite dramatically. And it's actually down, most recent data I've seen is down around 1.1. And as a result, China's population is now starting to shrink, which is quite remarkable, right? Again, people didn't think this would happen so quickly. The birth rates in Asia fell more rapidly than many people were forecasting. And there's other places like Singapore and Hong Kong where the birth rate's really ultra low, even lower than Canada. So we're sort of we're moving into that club of very low fertility countries, right? But there still are several in the world that have even lower fertility than Canada. And of course, I mean, even if you broaden it a bit, like, I mean, if you think of, for example, India, I mean, now the world's largest country, it just recently surpassed China in terms of population size. Even India recently is falling to about replacement, just a slightly below replacement level fertility, right? And there's many states in India that have well below replacement fertility. So the birth rate's been going down quite quickly across many countries. Even in sub-Saharan Africa, the fertility rate's coming down, although it's much higher than most other parts of the world, right? So we're seeing it right across world regions.
So it sounds like there is a trend of declining fertility almost all over. Are there
Right.
any nations which have actually succeeded in raising their fertility rates?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's not easy. If you start making comparisons around the world and looking at efforts to impact the birth rate, it's a lot easier to bring the birth rate down than to bring it back up once it's gone down, right? So, I mean, that has been the preoccupation for many, many countries that have been experiencing relatively rapid growth, to bring the birth rate down. And that's a question of, proper access to birth control and so on and so forth, right? Public health. But in Western countries, it's been going down. It is noteworthy that, yeah, France has been up and down in terms of its birth rate. It's at an all-time low, so there's a lot of concern in that country right now, but it's still noticeably higher than other parts of Europe, right? Its birth rate's at about 1.8. That's quite a bit higher than Canada. And one reason for that is the government in France has been certainly more supportive of families than other parts of Europe, and I think that's been quite intentional. Right, because there's this nationalism in France, and they're concerned with population decline, so they're supporting the family and they're trying to maintain the birth rate. It's down to 1.8 now. It's big news in France. Everybody's talking about it, right? In France, well, my gosh, we're down at 1.3, right? It's noteworthy that some other European countries in the north of Europe, in particular, places like Norway and Sweden, their fertility's been up and down, but they're more social democratic and they've been quite supportive of families as well. It's also noteworthy that perhaps the status of women is relevant as well, and actually gender equity to a certain extent. In some of these Northern European countries, there's greater gender equity in the labor force as well as within the home, where the division of labor is not as traditional as in other parts of the world. And what we're seeing is when men are likely to be involved in raising kids, women, at least in Europe, are slightly more likely to want to have kids. That seems to be happening. So gender roles are certainly relevant. Some people speculate that might be one of the reasons why the birth rate is so low in Southern Europe, because I mean, women have in Southern Europe have made major strides in terms of entering into labor market and moving towards parity with men there. But still, the division of labor within the home tends to be a bit more traditional. And for that reason, women don't want to take on the double burden of working full time and raising kids. The birth rate's a bit lower. That might be a big factor in explaining why Korea's birth rate's so low right now as well, right? Because again, traditional gender roles, when women don't want to be stuck in the home, they want to be working like men. They want the same sort of opportunities, but maybe the men aren't quite as willing to sort of accommodate that.
Well, you've touched on this a little bit already, but if you could expand on factors that are causing this decline in birth rates, especially in Canada.
For sure. So over the longer term in Canada, what we've been seeing is just a continuation of longer term trends in terms of, well, first of all, our society's become more secularized, right? And so, I mean, religion's not as important as it once was for many Canadians. And religion has historically been sort of pronatalist. I mean, there was a time, for example, in the province of Quebec, whereby the Catholic Church was dominant, right? And the Catholic Church has always been pronatalist. And but in Quebec, they're not listening to the priests any longer, right? So we've had this long-term secularization. We've seen a dramatic shift in gender roles, and the status of women has changed quite noticeably, of course. I mean, we're now seeing that young men and young women are almost equally likely to be involved in the labor market and almost equally likely now to be employed full time. And so, I mean, it's tough to sort of juggle the time when it comes to raising kids and working at the same time. So that's had a downward pressure on the fertility rate, that's for sure. I mean, what we've seen more generally in Canada over the last couple of decades is that young adults seem to be increasingly delaying what demographers might refer to as fundamental life cycle events. For example, they're staying in school longer. The majority of Canadians are now going on to post-secondary, either college or universities, some on to graduate school and so on, right? So they're finishing school at a later age. Interestingly, this is one of the biggest differences from my generation and young people today. They're staying within the parental home much longer than in the past, right? They're delaying marriage or avoiding marriage. What we see is relationships slightly more stable, un unstable than in the past. And as a result, I mean, the average age at first birth now in Canada is over 30, right? Whereas during the height of the baby boom, it was around 20, 21, 22. It was very young, right? People were starting their family very early on. Now it's been delayed quite a bit. In fact, if you look at the average age of childbearing in general, for women it's 31 and a half, and for men it's somewhere around 34, right? That's the average age of childbearing. So we've been delaying it later and later and later in life course. I mean, we saw birth rates plummet for women in their 20s, and now interestingly, it's even starting to go down among women in their early 30s, right? So, I mean, you only have so many years to have kids, and often people will delay childbearing till they're well into their 30s. What tends to happen as women move into their latter 30s is that their fecundity, their ability to have kids, tends to decline quite noticeably. So as a result, I mean, right across Canada, fertility clinics are busy because people are having trouble conceiving. A lot of women are just not, and couples, young couples, are not having as many kids as they desire. It's interesting. Actual fertility outcomes are lower than what people state that they want, right? Which is interesting. Although having said that, I do think we've most recently seen some noteworthy changes impacting the well-being of young adults. It's noteworthy in our larger cities, but now it's happening right across Canada, even in smaller cities, even in some of our rural areas. The price of housing actually has gone up quite noticeably, and it was quite dramatic. It's actually gone up quite noticeably from around about 2019, 2018, through to the present. Prices have stabilized somewhat, but many people are expecting that as soon as interest rates come down a bit, I mean, the price of housing is going to go through the roof, right? It's not only the price of housing, but also the price of rent. And again, the price of rent's really been increasing quite dramatically as of late in many, many cities across Canada. I always think of the young couple living in a large city, and they're thinking about having kids. They're renting a one-bedroom apartment, and they're paying a couple thousand bucks for that apartment, potentially, depending on where you're living. That's a one-bedroom, right? And they might have been living there for 3 or 4 years, right? So when they got their rent and they're established in that home, the price of rent was a lot cheaper than it is today. Now they're going out, they want to have kids, but they need an extra room. It's going to be hard to have kids without 2 bedrooms. So you're looking for a 2-bedroom apartment, and the price for a 2-bedroom apartment's gone through the roof, right? So for a lot of people who are renting, it's become more and more difficult, right? Those sorts of economic pressures are certainly relevant. There's also a lot, it's always been true that the economic circumstances of younger adults have been more challenging relative to other Canadians, perhaps. But I mean, there have been some shifts in our economy that are of some concern. People talk about the rise of the gig economy and precarious work and things like that, which make it more difficult to have a stable job over time. You know, that 9-to-job standard employment, whereby you have some job security, you're working for a company that has some commitment towards you, and it's not just the opposite, right? And you can stay there for a while, and you have the salary coming in a predictable manner. Maybe that's not quite as common as it used to be, right? So these economic factors are relevant for sure. I can also think of cultural factors as well, right? I think there has been a cultural shift, and that might be one reason why it's difficult to bring the birth rate back up when it's fallen to a relatively low level. I think a growing proportion of Canadians, young men and women, are thinking about, do I really want to have kids? Do I want to have kids, period, right? It's true if you look at Stats Canada has actually surveyed, tried to get a sense of what's going on, and they're finding that birth intentions are going down, and that a growing share of Canadian women are saying that they're going to remain childless, right? It seems to have become almost a lifestyle alternative for a lot of young adults, whereby I think I'm going to do other things with my time. I'm not going to be spending my time raising kids. So they value their time over family life, right? And so I think that's happening to a certain extent. I could speculate as to other factors at play. I mean, things have not been easy as of late for young adults. I mean, we just went through that pandemic, right? And that was rather traumatic for a lot of young couples, right? And so they would have delayed giving birth in that context. We're expecting somewhat of a rebound, but I'm not sure if it's going to happen. But it threw a lot of people off to a certain extent, right? In addition, we have some trends that are quite disturbing. You think of environmental issues like global warming and much of the political uncertainty that we've been seeing as of late, not so much in Canada, but in other parts of the world. I mean, it can be all rather discouraging. I talked to my students. There was a time whereby would be debating, how many kids do you want to end up with? Do I want to have a small family? Do I want to have a large family? Increasingly, it's a question of whether or not I want to have kids or not. I'm not really a child person. I'm not really into that sort of thing. You're hearing a lot of that. And I think some of that might have to do with, there is evidence to suggest that young people today are slightly more pessimistic than was true of earlier cohorts. And in that context, they're not as quick to want to start family life. I mean, I think those things are probably relevant to a certain extent.
Thank you. That was so insightful. Now, coming towards public policy, fertility and the decision to have children is such a private thing. So why do fertility rates even matter as a public policy issue? And what would the implications of these declining fertility rates be for developed nations like Canada?
That's a fundamental issue. I think it's important that we're paying attention, right? For a variety of reasons. More developed countries like Canada, well, Canada in a sense is, we're not typical. Canada is not a typical country in that Canada is a country of immigration, much like Australia, right? So the situation here demographically is quite different from, say, the situation even south of the border. They're not nearly as committed to immigration as we are, right? If you look at the proportion of the population born abroad in the United States, it's not nearly as high as in Canada, right? If you make international comparisons, Canada's a country that has a large proportion of its population born abroad or are children of immigrants themselves, right? I mean, if you look at that nationally, it's over 40% now, right? First or second generation. So Canada's a country of immigration. You don't see that everywhere. So, I mean, if you look at certain East Asian countries, they're not receiving any immigration whatsoever, right? So they are going to be experiencing population decline, no question about it. That's happening quite dramatically now in China, of all places, unless their fertility rate rebounds. It's happening quite noticeably in Japan right now. Again, there are other places in Europe, you know, in Southern Europe that don't receive nearly as many immigrants as Canada, proportional to their population, and their numbers are going to start to decline. So if you look at these longer term forecasts, I mean, yeah, there are parts of Europe. Europe's population is expected to remain relatively stable unless they increase their immigration quite a bit and can actually decline. Many countries will be declining in size and it will have implications because, you know, you think economists, they talk about the implications of demographic change. Well, it's sometimes quite difficult to accommodate rapid population growth, but population decline in and of itself has a whole series of challenges associated with it, you know, economically and politically and so on and so forth. So that's a situation in much of the world that has currently below replacement fertility. And if you go far enough into the future, that's going to probably be the reality for most countries. Most countries already, over half the world's population right now, are living in countries that have below replacement fertility, believe it or not. I mean, the fertility rates have dropped quite dramatically. Having said that, though, if you go to Canada, on the other hand, Canada is a country of immigration, and it actually continues to be quite highly committed towards the idea of using immigration to maintain its population and labor force. In fact, we're currently facing a rather unusual situation in Canada. For a demographer, it's unusual because what we're currently experiencing is record low fertility. We've never seen our birth rate so low. Simultaneously, our population is currently growing at a very robust, very rapid pace, right? And, you know, if you look at why, about 95% of our growth right now is international migration, right? So our population is growing rapidly. In fact, if you look at 2023, I mean, our Canada's population actually grew by 3% in 2023. And that was largely international migration. We grew by 1.2 million people. Wow, that's incredible, right? Whereas historically, we were growing at about 300,000, 400,000 a year, right? We face declining fertility, our natural increase, the difference between births and deaths continues to decline. Soon we're going to be in negative territory when it comes to natural increase, and all of our growth will be international migration. So, I mean, some people think of low fertility, very low fertility, putting you on the edge of population decline. It really depends, right? It depends on what sort of commitment you have as a society towards immigration and maintaining your numbers and maintaining labor force. Right. So, you know, the rate at which your population growth is relevant here. But also, I mean, if you have very low fertility, it also has an impact upon the pace at which your society ages. Right. Because, I mean, Canada right now is a relatively old country by international standards. I mean, Europe is older than Canada. But, I mean, we have a growing share of our population that's over the age of 65. That share is increasing quite quickly. What happens when you have a low fertility rate, as we move towards lower and lower and lower fertility rate, we're going to have an older population. It actually contributes to population aging, right? Can we accommodate that population aging? It's going to be a challenge. It depends on how low the fertility rate falls as well. Because if we continue with this downward trajectory, our society could age a lot more than it has, right? If you look at the situation around the world, Japan currently has, believe it or not, 30% of its population over the age of 65. And that's because it's a country that has had very low fertility for a long time, and they've had virtually no immigration. Canada, on the other hand, we bring in immigrants, which helps to a certain extent, right? Because you can deal with labor shortages in that manner, right? You can actually so maintain the growth of your labor force by doing so. So, I mean, Canada would certainly be much older today than it would have been had we not had relatively high immigration. Having said that, I mean, our population will continue to age into the current century. How much, that's it's an open question, but we're not certainly not aging as rapidly as Japan has been aging.
I do have a follow-up question, though. So you spoke about Canada's reliance on immigration to sustain population growth and maintain its labor force,
Right.
but can immigration address the declining fertility rate? So, in other words, does immigrant fertility, is that a way to boost fertility rates?
That's a good question, right? And in fact, it depends on the immigrants that are coming into your country. Like the thing about Canada is that it's always been highly selective in terms of its immigration, right? Because of the point system and so on. We tend to draw very educated people from all around the world, young adults that are coming here to obtain an education as well. And we get a lot of immigrants from Asia, from East Asia, and from China, places like that, Hong Kong, South Asia, places like India. These are countries that already are moving towards relatively low fertility, particularly amongst well-educated professionals, right? The middle classes and so on, right? So we are actually receiving a lot of immigrants from relatively low fertility countries. Not only that, but you think of how young adults struggle to establish themselves economically. Right? It's true of young Canadian born leaving our universities, right? Or colleges, they're trying to establish themselves economically. It's also true of new Canadians, right? Who are trying to establish themselves economically. Hey, I gotta find myself an apartment that's affordable here, right? In that context, right? You don't expect people to have large families, right? And that's typically what's happening. Like Canadians have this mistaken impression that immigrants are having much larger families than the Canadian born. But I've seen research. I haven't seen very up-to-date stuff on this, but I mean, I'm thinking of research done about 10 years ago. The birth rate of new Canadians was just slightly different than the birth rate of the Canadian born, right? No, I don't think it's a panacea in that regard, right? Again, new Canadians are much like Canadians not having kids, right? So we can anticipate population aging into the future, right? Unless economic conditions improve and it's easier for people to establish themselves economically. Wait, that's not necessarily true of other countries, like right? Because I mean, in other countries they don't have the same sort of selective immigration policy that Canada has, right? And of course, it varies depending upon what part of many of your immigrants are coming from, what part of the world. In parts of the world where you're getting a larger proportion from high fertility countries, you can anticipate higher fertility amongst immigrants. But it's not typically the case for Canada.
And now, circling back to the consequences, could you speak a bit more on immediate and long-term effects of the declining fertility rates, and especially on the changes on Canadian society and family units?
It's a good question. I mean, it's long term and short and over the shorter term. I mean, logically, if the fertility rate's relatively low, then there are going to be fewer kids being born, right? So you'd expect, in the Canadian context at least, for there to be 5 years down the road, fewer kids going into elementary school, and maybe 12 years, 13 years down the road, fewer people entering into our high schools and so on, that there'd be sort of a ripple effect over time of very low fertility, right? But you know what's really happening? I'm thinking of Toronto. I'm thinking of where I'm living in London, Ontario. The population continues to grow very rapidly, but it's not through natural increase, right? So there are lots of people moving in and they have kids into London. And so, in fact, we have very low fertility, but the demand for services over the sh right now are high, right? And I mean, they're building new schools, right? And we've had this lower declining fertility, right? Because our population continues to grow regardless of our very low fertility. And it's growing through international migration, right? Over the longer term, on the other hand, it's interesting. Stats Canada does these forecasts, these projections on the longer term consequences of low fertility. And there's a lot of uncertainty there because we don't know what future immigration targets will be at. We don't know to what extent we're going to be capable of reducing mortality, increasing the longevity of Canadians, but they try to make these projections. And it's interesting that we've already fallen to a, nobody was anticipating this. Well, I shouldn't say nobody. I'm sure there were some people anticipating it, but the demographers at Stats Canada Their low growth scenario brings us gradually down to, 1.5 over the shorter term, and then down to maybe by mid-century, 1.4 births per woman. And we're already down at around 1.3 nationally. So they didn't expect this sort of decline, right? But if you look at their projections using that scenario, their rapid aging scenario, we can anticipate that maybe from about 2035 to 2040, that we could see up to maybe 24, 25% of our population over the age of 65. But it's hard to say because we don't know what future immigration targets will be, and that will moderate the aging to a certain extent. Moving further with very low fertility, if fertility rates continue to decline like they have, like let's say we experience the ultra low fertility of places like South Korea or Spain, where it's down at around 1.1 or 1, our population will age more than that over the longer term. We could see as much as 27, 28% of our population over the age of 65 by mid-century, right? So, I mean, it does have consequences. If your fertility rate declines, your population ages more rapidly than it normally would. That is of some concern. One thing that I find is kind of rather profound, if you think about it, in terms of consequences of very low fertility, is that our family networks, even though our population is growing fast, our family networks are going to get smaller and smaller and smaller, right? So I was born during the height of the baby boom, right? And so I had a whole bunch of brothers and sisters, and I had plenty of cousins, and you'd have a family reunion, and there'd be lots of people showing up, right? So you had family around all the time. Increasingly, family networks are getting smaller and smaller and smaller. So think of the situation now whereby, the average number of kids pretty close to one, right? So you might have a sibling, you might not, you might have cousins, you might not, you might have grandchildren, you might not. The proportion of women that remain childless, right, without biological kids as they're moving towards the end of their reproductive years has been increasing as of late. And it's now at about 17% of women reaching the age of 50 that don't have kids, period. And that's expected to climb, right? So you're not going to have children, you're not going to have grandchildren. I mean, these things are sort of relevant because most Canadians rely upon family, right? To a certain extent, both economically, but also sometimes just in terms of social support. I would anticipate that as our population ages and as our family networks get smaller, that the issue of social isolation will become more pronounced, right? Particularly for seniors who might not have their children or grandchildren around that would keep them connected, right? So I think that's going to have consequences. Something we should be thinking about because to the extent that fertility remains low, we're going to have to prepare for that.
And now switching gears a little bit, in the context of the climate crisis and the immense burden on the world's resources, given the record high global population,
Right.
are lower fertility rates worldwide necessarily a bad thing?
Right. That's again another very good question. I like that one because it allows us to look beyond Canada to a certain extent, right? Because I mean, Canada is a relatively prosperous country and we've been growing quite rapidly and so on and so forth. Everything seems to be fine and dandy. It's interesting that the United Nations, they make their projections into the future. Our global population has just recently surpassed 8 billion. And it's hard for us to appreciate this in many low fertility countries, but the rate of population growth globally is still just below 1%. It's going down quickly because fertility rates are dropping quite quickly, but it's still at about 0.9% right now in 2023. So our population globally is going to continue to grow for some time. The United Nations estimates they have various scenarios out there. They have their low growth scenario, their high growth scenario. Well, quite frankly, everyone points to the medium growth scenario, which is probably the most realistic. And that puts us growing by an additional 2 billion at least before our population stabilizes sometime later in the current century, right? Not in my lifetime, but possibly in your lifetime, we could see the global population stabilize. Now, there's two ways in which the global population is going to stabilize. And I think there's a consensus that it has to stabilize sooner or later, right? We can't indefinitely grow to 12 billion, 14 billion, 18 billion. I mean, what's sustainable over the longer term, right? So our population is going to continue to grow for some time. There's only two ways in which our global population growth can stabilize. And one is reduced fertility, and the other would be increased mortality. And nobody wants increased mortality. So inevitably, we have to all move towards replacement level fertility if we hope for the global growth rate to stabilize, right? So it's something to be thinking about for sure. In Canada, on the other hand, we continue to grow with international migration, regardless of our birth rate. But you know, I think a lot of people are thinking about these sorts of issues. I think that might be one factor why many young adults are thinking about having smaller families, right?
And now turning to potential solutions to declining fertility, I know you mentioned the $10 a day childcare that's being rolled out throughout the country, and it's been in the headlines a lot. Has
Right.
that in any way tried to stem the decline in fertility so far?
I kind of wonder if that's why they're introducing this policy federally, right? Because they're looking at declining fertility rates. I think a big reason why it's been introduced is because half the federal cabinet currently are women, right? And so we're paying attention to this issue because it's an issue for a lot of people because women, even through to the present, continue to take on the bulk of childcare, right? So, you know, it's hard to say because it's still relatively early with this policy. It's still being rolled out in many provinces, and it's not easy to roll it out quickly. I think we could probably point to the experience of Quebec, and it seems to have helped to a certain extent, right? Again, Quebec's fertility is higher than elsewhere, but it's still not that high. It's about 1.5, you know, it hovers 1.5, 1.6, right? So it's a bit higher than elsewhere. So it seems to me supporting parents with this sort of policy can help to a certain extent. But again, there are cultural factors and so on that are at play here. You'd think that many of the policies that were introduced at the federal level and provincial level to a certain extent would help. I mean, I'm thinking in particular of the enhanced child tax benefit. It was enhanced quite a bit. It was actually first introduced by the Conservatives quite a while back. It was enhanced quite a bit when the Liberals came to power. And it's not trivial. I mean, the amount of money that's being given to families for having kids. It's managed to reduce child poverty quite noticeably. It's actually been a very interesting reform. And you'd think that in itself would make it more affordable for people to have kids. But I mean, even in that context, we see fertility rates decline. It's hard to motivate people to have kids once they've decided they're not going to have some. It is very difficult to introduce policy that will have an impact. If you look at the situation internationally, the efforts have been mixed to a certain extent in terms of supporting childcare. But again, we could turn to the example in France, where we see higher than average fertility in that country relative to some of its neighbors. And that country has really been quite supportive of family life. Not only the government, but it just seems to be a broader cultural norm, right? That, you know, someone has kids, we're going to give them a break in terms of hotel accommodation or how much we pay for transportation, things like that. So, I mean, the fertility rate is higher there than most other European countries. So it is noteworthy to see that.
And now, just to round off our conversation, in your opinion, how important are declining birth rates as a problem for Canada? And to build on that, does the saying demography is destiny hold true in the context of these massive demographic shifts that we're seeing?
Yes. As a demographer, I think, these demographic trends are rather important and they shouldn't be ignored. That's one reason why I'm happy to see the Stats Canada release this report. And it actually drew quite a bit of attention and people are talking about it, right? Yeah, and the fact that we're having very small families will have profound implications for Canadian society over the next several decades, no question about it. Again, so what we should do is, I'm not sure how successful we can be in terms of increasing the birth rate if we consider that a necessary goal for public policy. I'm not sure if we're going to be successful with that. Birth rates could rebound. Who can predict the future, right? But having said that, I mean, given that the fertility rate's likely to remain quite low, we have to prepare now for the future in terms of population aging. I mean, already we're having issues there, right? I mean, I think our public pensions, government pensions are reasonable, but there are a lot of people who do not have good pensions and they're going to be approaching retirement over the next several decades, the cost of healthcare with age population aging, it can increase the cost quite dramatically. And we're not even close to being there yet. Okay. Some of the biggest cohorts in Canadian society were born during the baby boom, right? And they're now in their early 60s and latter. The oldest of the baby boomers are roughly 70, right? And then we had the baby bust and much smaller cohorts following them. Well, these relatively large cohorts are moving right now into those ages where chronic illness is a major issue, right? And the costs of healthcare begin to accelerate quite a bit as you move into the latter part of your life, right? Into your latter 70s and into your 80s. There are going to be major demographic pressures in that respect with population aging. And it's going to become more of a problem if our birth rate falls to really, really low levels. Because, I mean, again, people not being born today are not going to be entering the labor force 20 years from now. I mean, that nurse or doctor that would have been born today is just not going to be around, right? Right, 20 years down the road. So there will be greater pressures potentially in terms of an imbalanced age structure, right? So demography's destiny to a certain extent, we certainly have to prepare for these demographic trends that are going to have an impact. We have to be thinking about it.
This has been a very insightful and very detailed conversation. So thank you so much, Professor Kerr, for joining me today.
Yeah, you're more most welcome.
Once again, that was Ragini Singh Panwa's interview with Professor John Kerr, who joined us for a discussion on declining fertility rates in Canada and its impact on economies and societies globally. Thank you for tuning in to Beyond the Headlines. You've been listening to Beyond the Headlines on CRUT 89.5 FM. That wraps up our show for this week. We were joined by Professor Dawn Kerr today. Thank you so much for coming onto the show to discuss declining fertility rates in Canada, globally, and its impact on economies and societies. Today's show was produced by myself, Janelle Alvaro, alongside my co-producer, Ragini Singh Panwa. Now, if you liked today's episode, please like and review us wherever you're listening. The views expressed on the show do not necessarily reflect the views of the producers, CRUT, or the Monk School of Global Affairs and Public Policy. If you've missed any part of the show, be sure to check out podcasts of all our episodes on our website at beyondtheheadlines.net, as well as Spotify and Apple Podcasts. If you're a fan of our show or want to stay up to date with policy issues in Canada, follow us on Twitter at BYOND_headlines. You can also find us on Instagram and Facebook. Be sure to tune in next week as we continue to take public policy discussions out of the hallways and onto the airwaves.